Almighty and eternal Father, again as we enter into thy presence to worship you in spirit and in truth, we are thankful that as thy children, we can say, Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Know that you have transferred us as a people from thy divine presence to earth, and that we have entered into this world and are dwelling here in physical bodies, as thou hast unveiled to the Apostle Paul that thy children are thus in the bodies of flesh. Thankful that we can say, Our Father, and thankful that we are a part of an eternal kingdom, and knowing, Our Father, that you are spiritually energizing thy people to proclaim thy word, that you are waking them out of their sleep, and that you are bringing them out of their apathy, and you are stirring them across this land and throughout the nations of thy kingdom as bone comes to bone for the national reawakening of thy household. Our Father, we thank thee for the work of thy Spirit, for the realization that shall guide us into the knowledge of all truth, that has unveiled the spiritual vision that has produced the great technology and the mighty creative capacities of thy household and thy people in the earth. We are thankful, our Father, that it has been our privilege to have been born into thy household, that we are a part of the great nations of thy civilization, and as we are a part of that Western world, may we be empowered to carry and lift up thy ensign unto the ends of the earth. We pray, our Father, for the binding of the darkness, the loosing of the light, the lifting up of thy standards in the great nations of thy kingdom. As we meditate upon the measures and the things which are before us, we say, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And then we ask it. Amen. Again, as we have another service on this Memorial Day, it is only fitting that we as Christian Americans recognize that this great nation under God had a great destiny and was planned and purposed to do a mighty work from the foundation of the world. That in the days of the writing of the prophecies of Isaiah, it was made known unto Isaiah that this great nation would have the symbol of the outstretched wings of the eagle. That it be a nation powerful from its beginning, from this time onward. A nation blessed with the many rivers which would divide it. And a land which was to extend throughout the courses of time into a mighty commitment before God. The prophecies made concerning this nation that it would be a leader among the nations of God's kingdom, and that in the hours of great trial and struggle it would stand out as one of the great forces, as a geopolitical center for the kingdom of God. So we have the privilege of being citizens in this nation. And this nation would not be here if it had not been for dedication upon the part of those stirred to dedicate their lives, and even all that was involved in their living, the entire structure of their destiny for the preservation of this society. They dedicated their lives and their fortunes and their sacred honor. It is only fitting that there is a Memorial Day in a nation like this, because as we have this memory for those we call our soldier dead, there is something that transpires in our consciousness that transcends this, for there is no death. It is but the destruction temporarily of the body of flesh, but we who are the children of the eternal know that these are eternal children also, that they possess eternal life and they never perish. And like the words of the great Apostle Paul, to be absent from this body is again to be present with the Lord. Out of the deep philosophies of the Christian faith, we understand that we are dwellers in two planes. Begotten in the heavens with celestial bodies of light, we also have been begotten in the flesh in the physical bodies of the molecular electronic masses of substance. And thus, while we pulse with life in celestial realms, also these physical bodies pulse with life in earth. And men live within them, occupying them with spiritual capacity and with soul consciousness that depends upon the testimony of the senses. But in this we see a people, spirit, soul, and body, in the image of the Most High God. No wonder it is that in the purposes of the Most High, He had ordained that His kingdom would rise in the midst of an age-old creation. We do not have to confess time to meet some narrow theology, for the evidences of science can tell us that our earth has existed for millions of years. Even the measures today that come out of the anthropological investigations of men like Dr. Leakey and others of the Ovale Department, Gorge in Africa, give us again 1,600,000 years that we know men have walked upon the face of the earth. And as we go into the history of anthropology and discover the background of all the peoples that have come between that time and now, and we know that there were races of early creations and there were people of these races that existed in Earth. We have a biblical pattern of history which is involved in an understanding of the scriptures and of the sacred writings. We know that there were great struggles in the heavens against the Most High God and His household, whose children you are. And that in these periods of antiquity, Lucifer, the dragon or Satan, as referred to in the 12th chapter of the book of Revelation, was able to gather one-third of the hosts of heaven out of the sidereal forces and seek to upset the equilibrium of the universe. In this he was doomed to failure. Conquered by the powers of righteousness, defeated and driven to earth, here he became God of this world. Here he upset the antiquity in antiquity ancient civilizations. In fact, the catastrophes that came from knowledge of wisdom that had run rampant and was now under the control of darkness, we see that the world was swept with catastrophe. Nuclear wars were fought in pre-Adamic Earth. Continents sank beneath the waters of the Atlantic and Pacific. Small islands remain above it, here and there traces of the patterns of the great past. Moving, migrating peoples find their histories traced back as they do in India and in the steppes of Asia and in the lands of China and that which remains of portions of Lemuria like Japan, in which they find their remnants of their land which they now live on, a part of their past. And in their tradition, their history, we find the supporting testimony of these facts that are in the scriptures concerning these days. If today there is ecclesiastical ignorance in the realms of yesterday, it comes out of their refusal to know and to understand. No wonder the Apostle Peter, illuminated by the Spirit and having been instructed by Jesus, writes, this there are those willingly ignorant of the things which the Scripture contains. They say the heavens are of old, and there's no change, nothing has taken place, all things continue as they were since the days of our fathers. There is nothing that continues as it was in the days of our fathers. The whole universe is in motion, and our earth is in solution. Its civilizations, its cultures, and its societies flow with the patterns of motion and are backed by the power of spirit or such energies as energize them. We who are citizens of this great nation, preponderant in majority, are members of the Adamic race. We have been begotten of the Spirit of the Most High God in the heavens. We have emerged out of the highest nations of the Adamic race in this period of time in which we have been chosen to live. Our names were recorded in the Lamb's Book of Life before the foundation of the world, and we were known as the children of the Eternal Father. In fact, as he points out to you through the lips of such apostles as the Apostle Paul, he foreknew you before the world was framed. He wrote your names down in his divine records before he rolled forth this area of creation. It is a rather remarkable thing that even in our time, though while we are making mention of this and considering our part in the patterns of divine destiny, that another denomination under the hierarchies of liberalism virtually departs from the Christian faith. And the Presbyterians in the last 2 weeks have thrown out one of the great and basic cardinal doctrines of their church, which was one of the foundation stones in the days when Knox formed that Presbyterian church. And that was the sovereignty of God, the omniscience of His wisdom, the absoluteness of His foreknowledge, and His ability to predestinate the effectual development of the history of His people, and as individuals or as number. And so it is that we point out that when you cast aside the sovereignty of God, and you turn your back upon the inspiration of His Word, you have nothing left but the empty philosophy of a world order. A church is not built on this. A church is built on living stone. We point out to you in this day that the general trend of our time has been prophesied in the Scriptures. We were told that in the latter days there would come a falling away first. And this falling away has been taking place. In fact, as this falling away is increasing, it's a falling away of ecclesiastical structures and institutions that should continue as the oracle of God. It is not as it relates to the sonship of the children of God or the offspring which the Most High God possesses. For those that are His children, whether they are in children in knowledge or whether they are children in ignorance. They are His children because children are not something that comes through any kind of philosophical gymnastics or mental strains or acceptance. A child is a child by one procedure and one procedure alone, and that is birth. And I assure you that it is not a matter of mental decision, but it was a matter of divine destiny that determined that the children of the Most High God by birth would reside in this earth to accomplish the program of their Father. This whole Bible is filled up with one subject, the gospel of God's kingdom. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. There is no other goal, there is no other purpose, and you and I have no other reason for being here as children of the kingdom and as white men upon the face of the earth than to build the kingdom of the Most High God. And to build that kingdom, we do not find ourselves following the direction of the blueprints of the world order. I do not say that there are not those elected representatives which you have in high positions of power that are not tonight surrounded by the enemies of your faith and race. Many of these who surround leaders in our country seek to guide them into building what they call a great democratic world. But let me point out to you that what they interpret as a democratic world is the Luciferian world denounced in the Bible and pointed out in both Old and New Testament is not your way of life. It is a program of socialism and collectivism that ultimately destroys all areas of ownership of property and all areas of enterprise and initiative. It would reduce the children of God to an extreme minority in the midst of the earth and then destroy them by the overwhelming masses which they can control out of Africa and out of Asia. I point out to you again, as we consider the things which are before us in measure, that never has it been more important for you and I to understand than now. If there are those whose bleeding hearts worry about the minorities of earth, then this is time to start thinking about the white race. You are the earth minority. You are 1/6 of the world's population. We do not speak out of fear, nor do we need to worry about the ability of this 1/6 of the world's population to survive. Because I look back in biblical origin when the offspring of the Most High God of the seventh day creation, when he said, "Behold, there is no Adamite to till the soil," and we were one man's family. And we had animosity around us because in the oldest records today, we discover that among the ancient Assyrians they have their records. Among the ancient Canaanites also, the records continue down. The Luciferians and those under his influence could stand Adam and Eve when only one man's family were on the face of the earth because they said the light and the radiance of their glory and some strange knowledge which they possess causes us to feel insecure in their presence. Let me tell you something. One of these days the world's going to witness a light and glory as they have never beheld it before, and there will be many people feeling insecure in the presence of such light and glory, and they will cry to the rocks of the mountains to fall on them. Let me point out to you that you have risen in a course of occupying history as a people embodied in the flesh and dwelling here on the face of the earth from one man's family until today. Every great nation of the Western world, Anglo-Saxon, Scandinavian, Nordic, Basque, Lombard, Germanic, these are the household of the Most High God. They are identified with Him by faith and they are identified with Him by race. And the Most High God hath marked very carefully this beginning. And the genealogy of this people can be traced back to Seth, to Adam, unto the Son of God. This is why, again, I point out to you, and it becomes important, that genealogy like this is important and not vain. For Jesus himself had the genealogy, which was the background of his household, traced all the way back through the scriptures to Seth, who was the son of Adam, who was the Son of God. So God completes the cycle when he is born among men. And he lifts up his standard, and when he gives statements concerning his kingdom. There isn't any doubt about the kingdom of God being tangible. It's tangible, it's real. It's made of men, and it's made of people dwelling in the earth. It's comprising of nations at this hour. The great prophecies which God inspired men like Jacob and other patriarchs to give, even in his deathbed unto his sons, were prophecies concerning the people who were his issue ruling in the earth. His Israel, if you can understand this term. This was an issue ruling with him. A people that were his household, that were to definitely be nations, great nations, and companies of nations in the earth. We continue to point out to you, even though we have mentioned it in this afternoon's address, that this has been a very eventful week among the great nations of God's kingdom. For even though we have watched the long history of these growing city-states until eventually we see the rising nations of the Western world, we point out to you that there has always been hostility seeking to destroy the nations of God's kingdom. The powers of darkness that wished to rule out of idolatry and ignorance and superstition did not like the great rising vision, the tremendous faith, the great new dynamic that had been given unto your race with the Messiahship of Christ and with the demonstrated power of His resurrection. The descending force and order of His Holy Spirit had moved out over the children of the kingdom. And the resulting situation is that a rising stride was being developed by inspiration, knowledge, and vision. You may translate the flowing consciousness of God's Holy Spirit into the minds of men as ideas and instruments of picture and vision. There can be no doubt that such knowledge is know-how and understanding. A people that worship the right God shall be given such challenge and shall be given such vision. We can point out that we can turn today to the testimony of even the councils of earth, and they will acknowledge that you are the have-nations of the world, that you possess the creative genius, that you mold the substances of earth. You harness it as machines. You create it as bridges. You erect it as your architecture, but you have left a stamp of creating, molding strength upon the face of the earth. But you possess something more vital tonight than any of the things which your hands have made, an indomitable, determined spirit that moves through your race, that we shall be free. And within this declaration, God hath given creative vision. With knowledge comes understanding. With understanding comes freedom. By this declaration, we have heard these words, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." At all times and all ages have we had pointed out to us our enemies, those who would conspire to destroy our society, those who would gather their hordes from the far-flung outposts of the earth to conquer our nations, or would come in with subversion to try to destroy the strength of our state. It is by such declaration, then, that we have had the powers of darkness from the days of the Canaanites on down to their present abiding structure pointed out. We have found that in the days of Jesus they were aware that this was Messiah. They decided that they must destroy Him, crush Him, and kill Him before His kingdom grew and His people were challenged and enlightened. The strange Ogbu that controlled the temple in the days of Jesus said concerning Jesus Christ, "If we do not kill this man, He'll gather together the children of God that are scattered abroad, and we're going to lose control over this nation." I point out to you that the power of God's Spirit will conform to this design which He in His will hath ordained from the beginning, that He will gather His sons and His daughters, call His sheep by name and lead them out, and then build such a kingdom as the world hath never beheld before. So we stand at a very climactic period. We will not go back and review over those concepts of history so familiar to you from the days of revolution to our time. We will not have to review all the patterns of struggle and trouble as the powers of darkness start to destroy our nation, or to stimulate what some thought was patriotism and statesmanship, and others little understood the economic manipulations behind it that threw this great nation into civil war, or tried to crowd it when that war was over by subordinating this society to the acceptance of leadership and administration, and it had neither the mental capacities nor the intellectual abilities to cope with it, and they sought to swallow us up in the days of the carpet-bagging destruction. But again we find that vision, determination, and courage brought us out of this period of time. We have come down through great struggles, but always as we watched development here, there was development going on among the nations of God's kingdom. Carefully and subtly, the powers of darkness sought the destruction of the great geopolitical heart centers of Christianity. They created conditions of crisis. They manipulated areas of economy. They sought to thrust Christian nation against Christian nation. One of the great catastrophes in our civilization was when we engaged in World War I in a great struggle in which Germany and Britain and the United States and all the great white nations of the world were embroiled. It wasn't long before other facets would involve. Struggles that involved Palestine, battles that went to the ends of the earth, were all involved in this struggle. And when out of the end of that struggle, as we pointed out when we talked to you on the writers in the book of Revelation, the world peace movements, which were a part of the beast system, seeking eventually to tie by massive disarmament areas and control the depth of the earth, set up the conditions which again were to permit the powers of darkness to move in on men. I tell you, socialism, corruption, and total evil moving into the heart of Central Europe gave birth to the conditions with also facets of unfulfilled commitments in the Treaty of Versailles to World War II. Yet again, the enemies of our Christian faith, with their economic manipulations, with their design to rule the world, were to hurl us into struggle. And again, we find the great nations of Christendom in struggle. We find the great two branches of the houses of Western civilization with their Nordic Aryan backgrounds locked in titanic war. The world is involved, but behind it stands the manipulator, which the book of James tells us is this evil world economic conspirator who has made his fortunes out of the times of trouble and war, who seeks the crushing of God's kingdom and the lifting of the standards of the hammer and sickle all over the world. We point out to you that though we emerged out of that conflict and the geopolitical heart center of Central Europe was crushed and broken, our bombs had swept away the cities, while we had all suffered in losses of life throughout the world, and standing back in glee with those that thought they had dismembered and destroyed the house of Judah and the Germanic house for all time. But I tell you that the Judah of the Scriptures, of the great Nordic background, which goes back to the hours of the measure of your race with all the other Aryan areas of its society, that the house of Judah, the Goshen of its Goshen, the peoples that were a part of it, have made up the kingdom of Judah, and those that were the issue ruling with God of his company. Now we turn to the house of Joseph, which is in the stick of Ephraim. Thus the great house of Joseph is the Anglo-Saxon people, and Britain, the empire, was the place where the throne had been planted, transplanted in the days of Zechariah from Ireland to Scotland to Wales. It is a significant thing that in the 19th chapter of the book of Ezekiel it says, "Who is thy mother, O lion, and all the young lions thereof?" Every white Christian nation in Europe has had in its dynasties the throne line of the house of David. I'm not talking about the Jews. The Jews have no partner in this matter. I'm talking about the great throne lines of your faith and your race. Why, the Jews don't even like the word Nordic. They hate the word Aryan, and they don't like to have you use the word Yahweh because they tried to steal your God. But they don't worship him. They have given the attribute of Yahweh to Lucifer, and they have worshipped Lucifer as they did in the days of Jesus. I point out that even at this moment there is nothing that they hate any more than the idea of great free nations standing together, Christian society standing in the gap against the hordes of world communism. I have in my hands, for instance, the Nybrit Messenger for this week. What makes it stand out, this great and significantly important Jewish newspaper for among them and their societies? Well, for instance, one of the major attacks they have is that the John Birch Society, for instance, jumped from 40,000 members in 63 to 80,000 members now. But they say the thing we're worried about is that it is growing politically along with all other right-wing organizations, that it's made up. They say that it is made up of right-wing political extremists who are designing not only the creation of a political party, but they're planning on taking over the government. Now let me tell you something. If you're an agent in here, you don't have to clap because we know you're here anyhow. Clap if you want to, don't clap if you don't want to. It doesn't make a bit of difference to us. Now, the thing I want to point out is this. That they are crying here in this Nybrit newspaper, in this report that was prepared by Dr. Swanson. Don't be carried away by these names. This man's the head of the American Jewish Committee. Swanson, see? No, they call themselves Smith and Jones. What we want to know is, what was his name before it was Swanson? Now, he said the thing that is the trouble with the John Birch Society and all these extreme organizations. They want to undermine the confidence of the peoples of this nation in the great democratic and world democratic institutions and processes and government. I'm not interested in a great world democratic government. I'm interested in only one thing: thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It's considered a practical thing by the liberals of the world order that we accept the program of a united world order, that we accept the program of a United Nations or a super world government, that this is democratic. that we embrace all gods and all religions, that this is democratic, that we guarantee total equality of all peoples within that society, that this is democratic, or that we redisperse at a minimum or maximum level a given income to everybody in the world, whether they produce anything for it or not, and then enslave the producers and creators in order that this might be done. This is also supposed to be democratic. In fact, the whole socialist policy operates with this area of confiscation, this area of redistribution, and this grinding down of those with creative vision. Yes, I'm not interested, strangely enough, in what some people call democracy. I'm interested in theocracy, and I'm interested in American liberty. And by the way, while we find the Nybridge Messenger attacking the John Birch Society, the John Birch Society better wake up and clear the schmooze out of the inside of their organization. Someone said, are you against the John Birch Society? I'm not against anybody going our way. We told you this afternoon that when God told Ezekiel to give the command, can these bones in this valley live? That he said, this was your race, and this was your nation, the whole house of it, and all the nations of it. Here it was. He says, I can bring it together bone to bone. I can put flesh and sinew upon it. I can put my breath in it. Let me tell you something, the great right-wing stirring from one end of America to the other, and throughout all the nations of the white world, is bone to bone coming together for the great new day. Now we have had a lot of developments, but while they cry out against those who were patriots and these which were part of God's kingdom, this very week Israel ally has twice attacked Jordan. Twice they invaded with aggressive acts against Jordan, which they want to confiscate. And Ben-Gurion, who is now making his pitch again to come back as premier in Israel ally, laid out a blueprint, which we have a copy of, and a total blueprint map of it, in which he wanted Israel ally to take over all of Egypt, all the areas as far out as ancient Babylon, and all the areas of the Tigris and the Euphrates, and eventually all the Mediterranean. And then, my friends, Mr. Ben-Gurion, in his own way, said, tomorrow the world. But if somebody else says tomorrow the world, how they cry. I point out to you that I have a commitment in this book for your race. For your father has said, listen, my children, tomorrow the world. Every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall proclaim that Christ is God. There is no doubt that in the midst of all of the turmoil and upheaval, we have survived struggles and battles, but this was a historic week. It can't be oft-repeated too much. The Germanic houses of Central Europe, which were the house of Judah and Israel, their companions, which extend on the east side to Issachar, which is ancient Finland, and Zebulun, which reaches to Romania, even into Hungary, and the white peoples of the Slavic houses. This is the east side of the encampment. Now, what does the Most High God say? He said, one of the things I'm going to do as I awaken my people, I cause a great stirring among them. I'm going to say that the stick or the government of Judah and all the children of Israel, his companions, and the stick or government in the house of Joseph in the land of Ephraim and all Israel, his companions, shall be welded together as a great and mighty governmental force in my hands. And they shall be as one stick. For Christendom shall know that the house of Joseph and the house of Judah now unite for the great struggle of Armageddon. You say, Dr. Swift, you wouldn't suggest that the United States and Great Britain and Germany surrender their independence or their sovereignty and become one country. Oh, no. But I suggest that it's high time that we stood shoulder to shoulder and said we shall not permit the world to trample on the kingdom, for we stand for liberty and freedom. So we remember this prophecy in this great and crucial year of history. For this is a crucial year, and it is a part of a cycle of a few years that will have tremendous impact, for they shall change the world. The measures have been written across the sky to those that can read them, as God himself placed the wonders in their motion and ordained the very symbols of the constellations in what is the great gospel message of the heavens. I tell you that you are approaching the great 0 hours in time and history, and events are going to move off like clockwork in the fulfillment of prophecy. In fact, you can look back over what has happened and what God said would happen, and you discover that you don't have to take a back seat to anybody because you believe the Scriptures, because so far there is nothing that has transpired in the face of the earth of any significant importance that hasn't been laid out in blueprint in the Holy Scriptures. We tell you that in the instance then of these wings, that as we mentioned in the book of Micah, that in these like climactic days when the great struggle would come, when the hordes of Africa or Asia would be turned loose on the nations of God's kingdom, when the true emblems of the lion, the unicorn, the outstretched wings of the eagle and the double eagle would stand high before the world as symbols of God's kingdom. Let me tell you this. He said in that day, on the throne of David, in the heart of Ephraim, Joseph, in the lands of Israel, he said, there shall be a woman on the throne, a daughter of Jerusalem, and I shall make her army strong, and the hosts of the daughter of Jerusalem shall stand also to help turn the enemy when he comes. I turn to the book of Micah and urge you to read in this day, when the nations of God's kingdom are among the greatest nations on the face of the earth. The United States, Great Britain, Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Belgium, Holland, Germany. These are the great nations of the Western world, the nations that even the United Nations say are the have-nations of the earth. All right. Behind them are all the powers and pagan forces in opposition, from the hosts of Africa and Asia, out across the steppes of the Russians, the forces of revolution, and all of this is gathered at this moment in a conclave of planning design for your destruction. While we assemble here, they are probably starting tomorrow morning sessions already over in India and also out in Jakarta, because we now have the Afro-Asian Conference of the United Nations in session. What is the Afro-Asian Conference a part of? They're a part of the Antichrist United Nations. No wonder then our enemies are trying to sell the United Nations. No wonder they hate the Church of Jesus Christ Christian and every other institution that's against world government and its superimposition over the sovereignty of Christian nations. No wonder they want us to be forced to accept the truth, or they want to, by forced law, silence all the churches that will proclaim that truth. Let me tell you, the minister that will not proclaim the truth of God in this vital hour as a messenger to his people is no oracle of God. And thus in this cry against those that make the opposition, the enemy seeks to give us a guilt complex for being Christian and being American. So in this very hour they're planning on an overthrow of your immigration laws, the moving of 70 million Asiatics into these United States and throw them in the western states of Nevada, Montana, Wyoming, and into Utah. And they talk about it. They talked about it to the last conference, and it's a part of the agenda of the Afro-Asian Conference now. They're talking about redistributing the standards of living throughout the world and giving a minimum standard equivalent to $5,000 of American money. Well, you say, well, that's fantastic. Sure, it's fantastic. It's as fantastic as you had the proposition of your own welfare board in your own state that wanted to guarantee that also here in the state of California, and everybody in the country would come to California if you guaranteed that kind of income to everybody to supplement their earnings where they work, or to take from those that make more than this to see that those that didn't have it get a leveling. If that isn't socialism, you explain to me what Karl Marx's program was. Now, under this instance again, let me point out to you this, that we stand in this historic hour. This very week, we saw the impossible happen. God said, I'm going to take the Germanic peoples, and I'm going to take the Anglo-Saxon peoples, and I'm going to start to weld them together. Now, there wasn't any question about the fact that even your foreign service has been a mystery to many of the peoples of the country. They said, why? It seems like ever since 2 or 3 years after World War II, we couldn't do enough to help rebuild Germany, and Germany had the resiliency to come back, and its industry started to grow, and sinews have come upon it. And what strange alliance goes on that this is our strongest ally on the continent of Europe? It's because destiny and prophecy were at work. And at this moment, the British Empire also understand this thing. And where you thought you might have had allies, you watched an infiltration, a mongrelization, and a socialization destroy some great allies, such as the one you had in France in the past. Now let me point this out to you tonight. That in this past week of David's throne, the undoubted Queen of Israel visited in this past week Germany. And when she visited Germany, she said, "We want the people of Germany to know that of my lineage and of my dynasty, 14 princesses of Britain have married princes of Germany, and 5 princesses of Germany have married princes of Britain." Yes, and all of the ruling houses in Europe have been ruled over by the seed of the house of David. And this is thy mother, O lioness. I point out to you that when the hordes and the princes were turned back by the princes of Germany and the strength of the knighthood of Europe that scoured the scourge and pushed it back in the days when the hordes had swept into the place called the Russias, that the princes placed upon the throne were Germanic princes, and of the union of those households we discover that by you reach time you reach the period of World War I, King George, Kaiser Wilhelm, and Tsar Nicholas were first cousins. No wonder then tonight that we find this a important week. And I again cite to you the peoples of Germany were stirred by the visit of the Queen. They cried, "Hail to the Queen." They cried out with great joy. Tears ran down their faces, as you can look at the news shots of the people crying, shouting, waving. And the speeches that were made are two great peoples come together at last, as we have in genealogy and lineage, now a Nordic standard against the darkness. Now you say it can't happen. People said it would never happen, but it has happened. And the commitment pledges of this visit was but a sign of the day in which you and I live, as God said, "I'll start to bring these two sticks together, because these are the forces that shall turn the hordes of the Antichrist and the Russian into conspiratorial invasions." And I tell you, you're almost there. You see, when we came to the climax of an age, and I point to you to again the book of Luke, and we read these words, "And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars. And upon the earth there shall be distress of nations, and there will be perplexity among people, and the sea and the waves will be roaring." These are but prophetic measures. Someone said, "Well, we don't go for anything like that." Well, it doesn't make a difference whether you do or not. You know who said this? God said this. How about that? Jesus Christ, the embodiment of God, said there shall be signs of sun, moon, and stars. And I've got to turn to a lot of illiterate clergy that don't even begin to know the science and laws in which they should be sharp, and say, "We don't believe it." That's all right. Because I'm going to tell you something. I don't believe a lot of these preachers are going to be preaching much longer either. You know, there are a lot of people who didn't believe Noah. You know, it never bothered Noah very much. He just went on, built that ship way up there on the plains. It looked real silly, but he's, you know, the important thing is his posterity are still here. That's the thing that counts, you know. In fact, you descendants of Shem, and every white man in this room is descended from Shem, can look back unto his great patriarchal ancestor Noah and said, "I'm sure glad Noah took the cue." The signs were across the sky, the measures were there, he was taught how to read them, and the gospel message of the stars were given to him. And we're here tonight. Now, let's point this out to you. Jesus said there shall be signs of the sun, moon, and stars, so you're supposed to be able to read them as well. In the book of Matthew, as Jesus speaks and Matthew records, he said that there will be a sign of the Son of Man in the heavens. "Then shall the tribes of earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory." This is the fulfillment of what the sign indicates. But how the tribes of earth will mourn when they see the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens. So it says, when's it going to happen? It happened in the 4th of February in 1962. that happened in a chain of measures that have been prescribed, and the alignment of the planets in that configuration of that time were the first time it had happened in thousands upon thousands of years, back before the last man of era of earth-shaking importance, and over 7,000 years before any white man was on the face of the earth. That was the last time that the wanderers were in that configuration, and then not on the total scale that they were in 1962. And there in the sign that was given of the pouring out, or Aquarius, the waterman of the heavens, all of them lined out. This was the sign of, I will pour out my spirit upon my sons and upon my daughters at the end of an age. I give a great dynamic power for a new era, and the old order is passing, and a new order is coming in. And for this our nation was dedicated, Novus Ordo Seculorum, the new order of the ages. This George Washington fought for, this, my friends, those our soldier dead gave their lives for, that this nation might continue to emerge to bring to completion Novus Ordo Seculorum. Listen, in the course of this measure that all of the pagans also knew, because in their background of astrology, they also worried about the sign of Aquarius. They worried about this tremendous sign of all of these wanderers that were now appearing. And they had in the papers of Calcutta, in the newspapers of China, and even in the areas of ancient Persian Baghdad, their local papers said, the sign of the end comes, the catastrophe is upon us, the world and all that is therein shall be destroyed. Now, they didn't know what it was all about. I have copies of newspapers that came from the ends of the earth, and people sent them to me from various parts of the empire and various parts of the places where we had representatives. And do you know the significant thing is that the heathen and the pagans of the earth cried when they saw the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens. So what does it mean? It means just as much to we who understand this as it meant in the days when the Magi, our wise forebears and a part of our race in the days of the birth of Christ, coming from the great observatories they had in four parts of the earth and extending all the way from the steppes of Persia to the British Isles, from the pyramid of Egypt to their final destination. And here, as we look out over these Sabaon treasures, they saw the sign of the birth of the Son of Man, the embodiment of God. They knew this was his sign. They said, we saw his sign in the east, and we have come to worship him. The conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter with the imposition of triumph is the ascendancy moved out of Jupiter, marked that they would come three times in a given year after they saw the great comet come out of the head of Aquila and cross the sky to Virgo. And they had witnessed this, and they knew this sign. It had been declared by the great patriarch Enoch, and now they arrived to come to the spot where he would be born. That's the reason why the wise men were eventually to reach Bethlehem of Judea, because they were measuring a sky measure, and they had been led then by a spiritual light that went before them and was a marker of the great host of heaven that stand by at all times around God's kingdom. Yes, if that was an important sign, and it was, the whole nativity story of Jesus Christ, the whole background of the historical events that found our Christianity, was locked in link to the events of that night, and a new era for your race, with a new victory and a new challenge. Well, tonight, as important to us as was that measure, was the sign of the Son of Man in February of 1962. For there was promised also that within 42 months, the sign of the Son of Man, the judgments would fall upon the enemies of God's kingdom, and the powers of the heavens would be shaken. Now, the powers of the heavens do not necessarily mean a disorganization of the sidereal systems or its constellations, but the host of heaven that had sought to overthrow the host of the Most High God involved the Luciferian revolt, and he was cast out of the sky as stars falling to the earth. Thus, in the last prophecies in the book of Isaiah concerning this, it says, and the host of the heavens shall be shaken, and the stars symbolic of their fall will mean that the powers of darkness defeated by Michael the Archangel warring in earth shall be shaken, and their power shall be broken, and these fallen hosts of heaven shall fall before the fresh-born sons of the eternal God who have been planted in the earth. So you see, you are in a measure of such time. Let me take you back again to the book of Matthew to support what I've said. And Therefore, there shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in the heavens. Why? Because it said that the powers of the heavens shall be shaken, and the sign of the Son of Man shall be in the heavens, and when the tribes of earth shall see this sign, they shall mourn and lament. Now, we're not the tribes of the earth, daughter. We are the children of the Most High God. And we say, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. But the earth tribes under Lucifer have mourned the loss of what they thought was a great sign of destruction. So all these newspapers cried out. They didn't talk about Jesus Christ. They just talked about the end of the world in portent and sign. And out of their superstitious lack of knowledge, they saw the sign that marked a new day and a new era, but to them it meant lost power. It happened that way. It's fulfilled. It's already taken place. But the 42 months, which start with the literal measure and are to end in the beginning of the judgment upon the enemies of God's kingdom, take you up to September 1965. It's a good year to be alive in. Under this configuration, we have had many measures. You know that today is a historic measure. You see, we have a total eclipse of the sun today, 9 degrees in Gemini. And with this, we had Uranus, always the symbol of economic or monetary power, transversing America's house, the sign of Virgo, but also going transverse across our house. And it was in opposition or square to Mars and Saturn, which is war and economic upheaval. Now you say, well, I don't think that's anything to do with it. Well, all you have to do is just be able to tell time, that's all. Those stars don't make things happen, they just tell what time it's going to happen. God can tell the time like you tell it with your watch. He tells you what's going to be the sign and what's going to happen when the sign comes. And it'll come. Realize that all this month, as you have been all this year in economic crisis, and you're bolstering your whole area of economy with a false system of deficit financing and irresponsible monetary patterns. I also point out the only reason why we haven't taken a major nosedive is because the administration has been falsely supporting our status of our economy by just priming the pump with phony dollars. So I said, what do you think we should do? I think it's all right to prime the pump since the whole thing's going to collapse anyhow. But I'm going to tell you something. It's about time for us to begin to think about the divine way of life with a monetary system that provides a dollar to buy every dollar's worth of goods there is to create. I think it's time for us to take the monetary system out of the hands of the shrews and give it back to the Congress of the United States. I think the time has come when in the issue of our national validity as far as our economy and our ability to consume and distribute the goods we produce, we should move into an interest-free society, functioning on production for wealth, and then, my friends, what the money changers done is we ally with his law. You can report that back to the ADL, but it's much easier to get a tape. You know, we are in a very important period in this climactic battle. You see, for a long time they have been planning to try to sell us peace, even to disarm us at every level, and then move against us suddenly with supply. They have very systematically tried to sell us on a split between Russia and China. And now in these latter days, we see that Russia and China, irrespective of what they say, are pouring strength into any one of their allies carrying out the struggle against us. On this fateful 30th, in which we see the sign of Mars and of Saturn squaring Uranus in our house, we also find Jupiter coming into the picture and conjoining Uranus, which shows that the strength of the divine order is now on the edge of open conflict, in full-scale conflict with the hordes of evil. Go back and look at the charts of World War I. Look at the charts of World War II. Look, my friends, at every basic struggle we have been in since the days of Sennacherib, and you'll discover that whether you like it or not, that things happen at a certain measure of time. Now I tell you this tonight, that in these United States, we see the powers of darkness have been involved. this date line is an internal date, because this squaring of Mars and Saturn is definitely affecting the internal pattern of our national house. Now listen, you are a part of a communist revolution already at work against you and against your race in these United States. Let me tell you this, whether the President's BB brain can understand this or not, that this entire Negro civil rights revolution is a communist spur of an attempt to crush your race and to take you over. The Martin Luther Kings and the Williams and the Farmers and all of this lot have either been communist trained, or they work secretly with communist echelons, and they talk peace and they plan violence. There is phony as Mahatma Gandhi. People think he was a pacifist. He was a pacifist. He was one of the most skillful manipulators in the areas of violence and revolution that Asia ever produced. Listen, I'm reading a current periodicals report that ever since September 22nd, 1963, the communist fifth column echelon in the Western Hemisphere under Castro had appointed Williams, who happens to be, of course, one of the most deadly figures in the Negro Revolution, Richard Franklin Williams, as his voice to the American Negro. He was called then the free voice, the Dixie. There's being broadcast three times every week, broadcast at last for hours from a 50,000-watt station in Cuba to the Negroes of Dixie. The federal government has discovered that Castro has been running fully automatic weapons and arms, and they have been caught, some of them, as they tried to land them in Florida and in other places along the Gulf Coast for the army of Negroes for violent revolution. That this man Williams has met and closeted with all the leaders of the Negro Revolution in the United States at this time. And they are planning on using them to help create the sphere of bloodshed and of violence so essential to their areas of revolution. And you happen to be, my friend, in the year. You're in the year. It's going to be a warm summer. It's going to get warmer. So you're not supposed to speak like this. You stir up people. No, my friends, we just want to awaken people to what the enemy plans to do. If you stand back and shut your eyes until you feel the laser at your throat, it's too late. So we have this voice that comes out of Cuba to the south. It's a rather significant thing that we can tell you that what the broadcast involves. Not only the call for Negroes to be prepared and armed to rise up to overthrow and liquidate all opposition with mass assassinations and with attacks upon your race and its leadership. Just remember that this so-called Radio Free Dixie is a total communist operation, and one of their published hate sheets is the Crusader. It's a rather interesting thing that the arming of these Negroes and the editor of the various books that are sent out throughout the entire South are the part of the supporters of what was called the Fair Play for Cuba Committee before this revolution broke out. And remember, that was the group out of which Oswald came, the communist that assassinated the President of the United States. Don't you ever forget this. Don't let anyone else ever forget it. Don't let all these liberals forget it either. When we had an assassination in our time, it was done by the hand of a communist. I think it is time for us to utterly eliminate communist influence in America, in our schools, in our areas of publication, in our national and political life. I think it's time for us to make sure that we can protect ourselves from these people that forfeit all rights in these United States by serving the armed forces and the secret revolution of a foreign power. There is no doubt that in the course of the measures of our time, that Congress outlawed the Communist Party. There is no question about the fact that in a number of states, including this one, we outlawed its operation and we passed legislation to take every communist off of our civil service payroll. You know why we've got communists in our schools and back on it, though it passed our legislature? Because we have men on the Supreme Court that have served the Soviet Union more effectively than they've served America, and they have taken away from you your right to protect yourself from this evil invasion. Those that say, what should we do about it? So the mild thing to do would be to impeach them if they will not uphold our Constitution and protect our society. Listen. In this hour, then, we turn. The call to the South for immediate turmoil, for a seething revolution is on now, and this summer and the holidays of this summer are to be picked from the 4th of July on as unprecedented signals for trouble in the United States. So here we have the story. All the strife, all this turmoil, all this trouble in the South, all this seething civil rights operation is just a facet of the Red Revolution. You can understand. There's not hatred. There's not hostility towards any individual because of the condition of his birth. But it is intelligent recognition that they were not of our household, our race, are not going to dominate it, and we're not going to absorb them, and they're not going to determine the destiny of America for the next 1,000 years. So as to Dr. Swift, what do you propose is about to happen? Well, since this measure of configuration affects political and economic patterns as well, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you what God says is going to happen. He said, I'm going to bring these bones together. I'm going to stand this race upon its feet. I'm going to give it its challenge. I'm going to spiritually stir it with my Holy Spirit. I'm going to restore standards of righteousness and purity, and I'm going to give back the racial self-respect. KLAC, with their scurvy Jew ownership, spent a week ago attacking us on their program, spent an hour and a half trying to repeat things which they cut out of one tape and another and pasted it together. They said the evidence of our being anti-Negro was the fact that we pointed out in our messages the attack on Rochester, New York, and Philadelphia. Well, if Negroes don't want to be associated with an attack on Rochester, New York, and Philadelphia, they better stop this kind of thing. Because if Negroes, under the civil rights of violence, can attack and rob the stores of two big cities, can create terror throughout New York and Brooklyn in subways and on the streets, can create the greatest area of crime in the history of our nation with all violence, and utilize the psychological excuse that they're disturbed over their civil rights, then we can talk about it. Well, what we say, and we again call your attention, is this. Those leaders that stir the Negro people to these areas of violence get them their greatest harm. That the best interest of all Negroes is established by the great desire of white Western Christian culture to educate and to eliminate all areas of ignorance and all inabilities to survive and to support and produce their needs. The testimony of Africa tonight is that the white man in Africa was training the Negro how to produce for himself, with giving leadership and investing in the areas of the raw materials of his country, and that they never had such development in all the history of Africa than they've had under white leadership, with his great creative genius, with his leading ability, which God bestows upon his sons and his daughters. You know, you can't help what you're like. You can't help who you are. You can't stand still. There's a drive in you that says you have to go. You can't stand darkness. You can't stand filth, you can't stand disease and sickness. You have to do something about it because you're the light. And as the light of the world, you're not to be put under a bushel, or you're not to be absorbed by the flax when the light goes out. Now this is my Father's world. Since this is my Father's world, and since his program for it is the best, I don't have to consult with witch doctors to see if they like it. There isn't any reason for us to go on over and sit down and get all the Buddhists happy because we're trying to stop communism. We're not just stopping communism for them. We're stopping communism from sweeping the world. If we're doing a bad job at it, it's because instead of letting the military handle the war, we're letting the politicians slow it down or step it up just to see whether they want to talk peace or not. You know, men like General Douglas MacArthur and Patton had more concept on how to talk peace than the present administration. The way you get them to talk peace is you lick them and they cry for help. it is. I think Senator Russell had the right idea. What did we develop these weapons for if we're not going to use them? Let's put this thing all out once and for all. We're told we have to be afraid. I listened to the State Department, however, say now, we don't have to worry too much now. You can sleep tonight because it'll be 10 years before the great danger comes. But 10 years from now, the Red Chinese are going to have such a stockpile of weapons that they'll be able to blow up our cities and attack the United States. And so we should start preparing a defense system against these weapons before that time comes. You know what we need? We need new leadership in America that has better vision than this. You say, what should we do? We should fulfill prophecy. We should blow up their reactors, smash their power to make the missiles, and we won't have to worry about anti-missiles. We'll destroy it before it comes. Because this Soviet Russia will attack us. Soviet Russia will disappear from the face of the earth the day she launches an attack on the kingdom of God. Now, I point out to you that when we march, we don't enslave, we set men free. In fact, we have to be careful that our politicians don't go too far and want to support them all. Nobody could say that the United States took away the freedom of men unless it was their freedom, as some might determine it, to destroy the rights of others throughout the world. So I point out that those who have marched down the corridors of time for this nation did not die in vain. Every once in a while, someone says, well, war springs up after war. Each sacrifice was in vain. No, my friends, because as we fulfill the prophecies of our destiny, we are emerging to an hour when a quickened, awakened society will stand for truth and triumphantly plant the standards of Christ the nation on the top of the world. Signs in the sun. That's right. Gathering sunspots to form strange measures of affected atmospheric pressures, electronic patterns that have affected even the movements of the air currents and have delivered as tornadoes in unprecedented numbers. This year, with low atmospheric pressure, with electronic impulses coming from the sun, with all the patterns that go to make up tornadoes, you've watched the surge of tornadoes and great storms sweep the earth. You have watched high seas and sea wave warnings, low atmospheric pressure measures creating the areas of earthquake and more earthquakes in the last year of major performance that you've had in any other period for the last 20 years in your history. Let me point out to you this. 10 days ago, 5,000 people died in the Bay of Bengal as the areas of the tidal waves moved along the coast of Pakistan and in the areas where never did anyone anticipate a tidal wave could happen from a fault so long silent. All over we see these measures of violence. The one of the scriptures said that there would be perplexity among men. They see things that are transpiring among men and nations, and there would be that the very sea and waves itself would be warring. I also tell you that there is something in great measure. The sun and the moon and the stars of the household of the Most High God. And as he is the light of the world, so also the symbol of your civilization and culture reflects that light. And all the offspring of the light are marked as the stars of the sky, and ye shall be numbered as the stars of the heavens and the sands.